he says. I do. It smells like cooking eggs, as well as something tangy and sour. Like a shredded plant I'd once eaten at the ports in Dalia, Kenetra. My stomach rumbles. Suddenly I'm tired of the weeks of dried meat and stale bread on board the ship. It smells like breakfast, I reply, turning in the direction of the scents. Something we could use a bit more of. Maggiano smiles at me. As he does, his face suddenly changes into a different one. It is my father's. Dark and grinning, the harsh lines of his wrinkles deep and prominent. I gasp, then turn away and shut my eye. Not now, I scold myself as my energy flares in fear. I cannot lose control of my illusions in the middle of this crowded street. Are you all right? Maggiano whispers. When I gather the courage to look at him again, he has returned to being himself. My heart beats weakly within my chest. I straighten my shoulders and try to forget the images. Don't worry, I say. I'm just impatient to find the bell dish. Nearby, Violetta frowns in concern, but she doesn't say anything. Raffaele slows to fall into step beside me. He nods in the direction where the city eventually ends. Your illusions, he says. Disguising us, it is exhausting you, isn't it? The energy in my chest strains as we continue to move through the city. I wish there were not so many people here. The constant shifts of their movement and colors and shapes make it difficult for me to keep the illusion over myself and the others. I'll be fine, I mutter at Raffaele. We are close enough to the origin that I can feel its slight pull. Remember, everything is connected to everything else. He shakes his head and frowns. Its energy will disturb all of ours. Be careful. Only now do I see that there is a certain strain in Raffaele's face, too. As if he were drained from more than just our journey. I look around, wondering who else is feeling the effects. Maggiano seems to be doing well enough, aside from his sour mood, but Violetta's face looks exhausted, and Lucent is uncharacteristically silent. As we go, I continue to blink away bits and pieces of illusions. The sky seems to darken, and a weight hangs over the city. Masked faces appear and vanish from narrow alleys that we pass, the glint of silver reminding me of how the daggers once looked. The whispers stir, appearing in the corners of the streets and the shadows of overhangings. Why don't you abandon this journey, Adelina? They say. Return to Kenetra. Go back and rule your empire. I look away and try to keep my concentration ahead of me. It is a good idea. I shake the thought from my mind. We are all tired, and the sooner we can have a good night's rest, the stronger we will feel in the morning. Perhaps Maeve will meet us by then. But what if she doesn't meet us at all? What if she sends troops to attack us instead? What if she has no interest in joining us on this journey? Raffaele must believe her on good faith, that she will come because she loves Lucent, but that is all. I look to my side where Lucent walks in silence. What if this is Maeve's way of seeking revenge for what I did to her navy, to withdraw herself, making our journey worthless? This is what I would do if I were her. So why doesn't she choose it too? We turn off the main road and down a narrow path with steps, heading around the side of a hill toward the tavern. As we pass by a small intersecting alley, the masked faces appear and vanish. Beside me, Maggiano frowns, stiffens, and cranes his neck down the alley for another look. Did you see something? I ask. Maggiano nods, his eyes still lingering on the alley we passed. A flash of silver, he says after a moment. Like a mask. He meets my stare. My stomach twists. It wasn't just an illusion of my own creation. Suddenly, Raffaele halts. Ahead of us are several people standing there blocking our path. Even though my illusions remain in place, they seem to recognize that we do not belong. Their leader steps forward from the crowd. This man doesn't look like he's from the Skylands. His skin is light brown, and his eyes are deep and dark. He hoists a knife in one hand. So, he says, A foreign troop heading through our territory. The whispers grow louder in my head. We want no trouble, sir, I manage to say, keeping my chin up and voice calm, working to keep the illusions I've woven over our faces steady. The man nods at me. Where are you from? Kill him. It has been so long. It will be so easy. The voices are persuasive. I could wrap him in agony right now, make him believe I'm ripping his heart out of his chest. But I cannot afford to do it here, not without knowing if there are more of them beyond this narrow street, and not with Violetta so sick. Maggiano saves me from responding by flashing the man a smile full of white teeth. From a much friendlier place than this town, I can tell you that, he proclaims. Do you greet all the foreigners passing through with knives? That must take up an awful lot of your time. The man's scowl deepens even as he looks at us in doubt. Raffaele joins Maggiano at his side. We have a friend who is very ill, he says, nodding up to Violetta. Can you tell us where the nearest inn might be? The man stays silent. More of his men have come behind us now. People whom I'd taken as fishmongers and passers-by gathering on the steps to block the way we came. There is fear in the air, sharp and dark, calling to me, and I hunger to call back, to grasp the threads draped around us and weave. My illusion over my appearance wavers only for an instant. The man narrows his eyes at me. They said you'd be in disguise, White Wolf. We know you are Queen Adelina of Kenetra. I blink in mock surprise. What? I reply, keeping my voice surprised. We are from Dumor, too. The man interrupts me with a bark of laughter. Dumor, he replies. You mean one of your puppet states. Maggiano unsheathes two of his own weapons. His pupils have narrowed into sharp slits and his body is tense. Near Raffaele, Terran stands tall with his sword half-drawn, ready to move. For the first time, I'm grateful to have him with us. There is no point in dragging this out. I've had enough. Let us pass, I say, pushing myself forward. My anger is starting to rise, and that energy becomes my defense. And we will spare the lives of your men. The group stirs. The leader draws a second knife from his belt. Beneath his brave exterior, I can sense the tides of terror. He is afraid to die today. For the Sealands, he whispers. For the Sunlands. Then he gives a nod, and his men lunge at us from both sides. Maggiano moves so quickly, I barely see him jump into the fray. His daggers flash silver in the light. Ahead of us, Terran sets upon two of the first men with a snarl of fury, unleashing his pent-up rage on them. He cuts them down easily. Move! Raffaele snaps, rushing us forward. We dart ahead as Terran opens a pocket for us, but the narrow street continues filling with more people, forcing us to a stop again. How many of them are here? They must have been waiting for our arrival for months. Violetta's horse rears in the midst of the chaos, lets out a squeal, and throws her from its back. Lucent catches her, just barely, with a curtain of wind. Violetta falls on the steps, and instinctively I push her behind me and force her against the wall. She is awake now, her body shaking like a leaf. One of the men lunges at her, but Lucent lashes out with her sword, cutting the other man in the stomach. Ahead of us, Terran cuts the path clear even as more come. Blades catch him, slicing his flesh, but he seems oblivious to his injuries, his body slowly, laboriously trying to heal itself with each attack. It's even clearer now. He heals noticeably slower than I remember. Behind us, Maggiano leaps up against the wall of the building and twists in midair, slashing one man neatly across the throat and another in his chest. The smell of blood and fear fills my senses, and I feel the voices feeding on the darkness, growing louder with each passing moment, strengthening me even as they veer me farther from what I can control. I stumble forward, trying to stave off the rush of illusions that threaten to overwhelm me. Our attackers' smiles turn skeletal, their forms monstrous. Their hands extend like claws toward us, as if they were dead trees in a forest, and suddenly I am struggling through their grasp, trying to breathe. Keep moving. This isn't real. I tell myself this over and over again. Taryn continues moving us forward through the fight, and behind us, Maggiano keeps them back. I try to concentrate on them. We have to find a way out of this street. Then, ahead of us, Raffaele stumbles. He grimaces in pain, then falls to his knees. Lucent rushes to his side. As I look on, she grabs his arm and tries to help him to his feet, but he winces, clutches his head, and stumbles again. There he kneels, crouching in pain, his hair spilling past his shoulders in a black sheet. His fear is a blanket over him, and my energy lunges for it. I glance around us. There is far too much chaos here for me to make all of us disappear behind a curtain of invisibility, and I want to save my power, but I can already see two of the attackers eyeing Raffaele in his weakened state. If I don't hide him now, he won't make it out of this fight. I focus my energy on Raffaele, then I weave invisibility across him. He vanishes. I rush over to him and Lucent as blades flash all around us. When I reach them, I wrap one of Raffaele's arms around my shoulder and help her lift him. Maggiano looks in our direction from where he's fending off an attacker. A few steps ahead, Taryn suddenly jerks backward as a team of attackers charge at once. One of them manages to get past Taryn. We're invisible now, but even though the attacker can't see us, he swings his blade in an arc toward us. I only have time to get a glimpse of his silver mask. An arrow sings through the air from the rooftops. It hits our attacker straight through his throat. He freezes in mid-movement, stunned, and then he drops his weapon and reaches up to clutch in vain at his neck. As I look on, he falls backward onto the steps. More arrows cut through the air from the roofs. Every single one of them finds its mark. I search the rooftops until I catch sight of a blur of armor darting by. Behind us, Maggiano lets out a whoop of laughter. In a flash, he has leapt onto one of the signs dangling in front of a door and swung forward, flinging a dagger down at the attackers. As I look up to see another figure dart by on the roofs, I finally glimpse a tall young woman with braids woven high on her head, the strands half black and half blonde, crouched with one elbow resting on her knee. She has a bow stretched back and pointed down in the direction of one of our attackers. She lets the arrow fly. The Beldish Queen has finally arrived. More and more of her soldiers appear on the roofs. The Saccharists, now recognizing the crest of her men, start to break apart in their confusion. Several of Maeve's guards appear at the end of the street. The sight of them seems to be the last straw for the Saccharists. Someone shouts an order to retreat, and the remaining attackers scatter immediately, dropping their weapons and making a run for it. Taryn continues to fight, but the battle is already over. The attackers melt away as quickly as they appeared until all that's left in the street are the fallen. I lift the illusion from all of us. My own strength leaves me, and suddenly, Raffaele feels overwhelmingly heavy. Maggiano hurries to our side and takes Raffaele's limp body in his arms. My attention turns to Violetta. She is still crouched against the wall where I left her, curled into a tight ball and looking as if she were concentrating on staying conscious. I walk over, then extend a hand to her. Violetta turns up her face to me, some of the lingering fear and distance in her eyes that had so defined our last few weeks together has faded, replaced by a familiar glimmer. It is a light I remember from when she used to walk at my side through Meritas, when we were the only company we needed in the world. The whispers still haunt the air around me, but I refuse to listen to them, pushing them aside. Violetta takes my hand and I help her to her feet. She leans against me, barely able to stand. "Taren," I say as he approaches us. There are slashes in his tunic and smears of blood on his armor, but otherwise he seems unharmed. He gives Violetta a cold look, then hoists her effortlessly onto his back without a word. "We have an encampment," Maeve calls down to us from the roofs. She has heavy black powder rimming her eyes and a streak of gold war paint on her cheeks. "You all look like you could use a rest." I see Maeve searching for me from her perch, and when our eyes lock, we stare for a long moment. I stiffen. There's an air of uncertainty hovering around her at my presence. I think back to the last time we set eyes on each other, when she had watched me call on Enzo's power to destroy a devastating number of her fleet. Even now I can envision the flames roaring all around us. She straightens and nods in the direction of the city's outskirts. "My men will lead us there." Then she disappears over the edge of the roof. Tragedy follows those who cannot accept their true destiny. Crime and Punishment in a Reunified Amadera by Fiennes de Marta. Adelina Amuteru. Queen Maeve is thinner than I remember, and her face has become harder in the months since we last met. The elite who aligns with death. With my weary demeanor, sunken cheeks, and hard gaze, I imagine she thinks the same when she looks at me. She and her battalion traveled over the Kara Mountains, the crooked range of long-dead volcanoes that divides Beldane from Amadera, and set up an encampment of sheepskin tents here on the outskirts of Laida, where humanity ends and a horizon rimmed completely by ice-capped mountains begins. Torches light the snow in patches between the camp's tents. The air has turned cold and cruel, cutting straight through my riding gear. As evening washes the bleak landscape in blues and purples, the Beldish Queen makes her way through puddles of slush from her tent to ours, flanked by her soldiers. I wonder what she has gone through since we faced each other on the seas, and what the state of her navy might be. A part of me calculates whether it will be worth invading Beldane in the future or not. No doubt she wants to do the same to Kenetra, but we both bite our tongues now as she nears. She gives me a stiff nod of greeting. "We leave at dawn," she tells me. "If your sister does not wake by then, carry her." I return her nod, even though my whispers hiss. This is the closest we will come to civility. We'll be ready. Maeve walks past me without acknowledging my words. I turn and watch her disappear inside our tent. "Show her what you can do, and then she will respect you." The Queen of Beldane and I may be forced allies for now, but there will be a time after this when we will all return to our sides and our enemy state. Behind her soldiers walks Maggiano. When he sees me, he removes his cloak and wraps it around my shoulders. I relax as it blocks the bite of the wind. The lingering warmth from Maggiano feels soothing against my body. "I can't talk him into getting inside a tent," he says, gesturing over his shoulder as ice crystals flake from his braids. Some distance from the tents, where the land fades off into the blackness of the mountains, I can see a lone blonde figure kneeling in the wind, his head down in prayer. "Taren." I put a hand on Maggiano's arm. "Let him stay," I reply. "He will talk to the gods until he feels comforted." But my stare lingers on Taren for a moment longer. Does he, like Raffaele, now feel the pull of the elite's origin calling from somewhere deep in the mountains? I can sense a pulse in the back of my mind now, a knot of power and energy lying somewhere beyond what I can see. Maggiano sighs in exasperation. "I've told Maeve's men to keep an eye on him," he says. "Let's not have come all this way only to lose him to frostbite." Then he turns and walks alongside me as we head back into our tent. It's warm inside. Lucent sits in one corner, grimacing as she wraps her arm in a hot cloth. She has injured her wrist again during the battle, but when she notices me looking, she quickly glances away. Nearby, Raffaele rises from his chair and bows his head in Maeve's direction. Maeve stands near the tent's entrance, her body turned subconsciously toward Lucent, her eyes on Violetta's bed. Even in the lantern light, Violetta still looks deathly pale. Her eyelids flutter now and then as if she were lost in a nightmare, and a sheen of sweat covers her forehead. Her dark waves of hair fan out across the cloak folded under her head. "Snow is coming from the north," Maeve says, breaking the silence. "The longer we stay here, the more we'll risk having our roots cut off. The snowbreakers are already heading up to the ranges."
"Snowbreakers?"
Maggiano asks. "Men who are sent up to the snowpacks. They break up the snow into small, controlled avalanches in order to prevent larger ones. You probably saw them in town with their ice picks." Maeve nods at Raffaele. "Messenger?" At the mention of his name, her stony face softens a touch. I'm surprised at the twinge of envy I feel, that Raffaele can so easily draw others to him. "Are you well now?"
"Better,"
Raffaele replies. "What happened?" I ask. "We saw you freeze. You crumpled to your knees." Raffaele's jewel-toned eyes catch the light, glinting a dozen different shades of green and gold. "The energy around me was overwhelming," he explains. "The world became a blur. I couldn't think, and I couldn't breathe." The feeling overwhelmed him. Raffaele's power is to sense each and every thread in the world, everything that connects with everything else. This must be how Raffaele's powers are deteriorating. The equivalent of my spontaneous out-of-control illusions, of Violetta's vicious markings, and Lucent's fragile bones. Unless we can succeed in our mission, his power will be his undoing, like the rest of us. I can tell by the look on Raffaele's face that he is thinking the same thoughts that I am, but he just gives Maeve a tired smile. "Not to worry, I'm well enough."
"It seems you stumbled across our traveling band at exactly the right time," Maggiano says to Maeve. In the silence that follows, Lucent pushes herself to her feet, wincing as she goes and heads for the tent flap.
"We should all get some rest then," she mutters. She hesitates a step as she passes Maeve. A flicker of expression, something lonely, longing, crosses her face, but nothing more than that. And before Maeve can react, Lucent ducks out of the tent and disappears. Maeve watches her go, then follows. Her soldiers leave in her wake. Raffaele meets my gaze and sits back down in his chair.
"Your sister is growing weaker," he says. "Our nearness to the origin of Laertes' fall has intensified our connections to the gods, and it is ravaging our bodies. She will not last much longer."
I stare at Violetta's face. She furrows her brows, as if aware of my presence near her, and I find myself thinking of when we once lay side by side on identical beds, struck down by the blood fever. Somehow, it never has left us. I glance at Maggiano, then Raffaele. "Give me a moment alone with her," I say. I'm grateful to Maggiano for his silence. He squeezes my hand once, then turns away and steps out of the tent. Raffaele stares at me, doubt on his face.
"He doesn't trust you alone with her. That is what you inspire, little wolf, a cloud of suspicion."
Perhaps that's what the expression is, or perhaps it is guilt, some lingering hint of regret for all that has happened between us, all that could have been avoided. Whatever it means, it disappears in the next breath. He tightens the clasp of his cloak and folds his hands into his sleeves, then moves toward the tent flap. Before he can step out, he turns back to me.
"Let yourself rest," he says. "You will need it," Mi Adelineta.
Mi Adelineta.
My breath catches. The whispers go still. The memory rushes to me clear as crystal of an afternoon long ago when I sat with him by an Estensian canal and listened to him sing. With the memory comes a rush of wistful joy followed by unbearable sadness. I hadn't realized how much I missed that day. I want to tell him to wait, but he has already left. His voice seems to linger in the air, though, words I haven't heard from him in years, and somewhere, deep in my chest, stirs the presence of a girl buried long ago. On the bed, Violetta lets out a soft moan and shifts, breaking through the turmoil of my thoughts. I lean closer to her. She takes a deep, rasping breath, and then her eyes flutter open. I hold Violetta's hand, weaving my fingers with hers. Her skin is scalding to the touch, darkened by overlapping markings, and through it I can feel the bond of blood between us, strengthened by our elite powers. Her eyes search the room, confused, and then wander up to my face.
Adelina,
she whispers. I'm here, I start to reply, but she interrupts me and closes her eyes.
You're making a mistake, Adelina,
she says, her head now turned to her side. I blink, trying to understand what she means, until I realize that she is talking in a feverish state and perhaps not even aware of where she is.
I want to turn back, she whispers, but your inquisitors, they are searching everywhere for me. I have their swords drawn. I think you may have ordered them to kill me when they find me.
Her voice cracks with dryness, hoarse and weak.
I want to help you. You're making a mistake, Adelina.
She sighs.
I made a mistake, too.
Now I understand. She's telling me what happened after she fled the palace, after my illusions had overwhelmed me and she had turned on me, after I had turned on her. A lump rises in my throat. I take a seat in Raffaele's chair, then lean toward her again. I told my soldiers to bring you back, I murmur, unharmed. I searched for you for weeks, but you had already left me behind. Violetta's breathing sounds shallow and uneven.
Took a ship bound for Tamora at first light,
she whispers. Her hand tightens around mine. Why did you go to the daggers? I sound bitter now, and my illusions spark, painting a scene around me of the days after Violetta had first left my side. How I sat on my throne, clutching my head, refusing trays of supper from servants. How I conjured blackness over the skies of Kenetra, blocking out the sun for days. How I'd burned parchments in the fire after my Inquisition patrols would write me, one after another, that they could not find her. How could you?
I followed the energy of other elites across the sea,
Violetta murmurs in a trance. Sweat drips down the side of her face as she shifts uneasily again.
I followed Raffaele, and I found him. He found me. Oh, Adelina.
She trails off for a moment.
I thought he could help you. I begged him on my knees with my face pressed to the ground.
Her lashes are wet now, barely holding tears back. Beneath her lids, her eyes move restlessly.
I begged him every day, even as we heard you sent your new navy to invade Maritas.
My hand clenches harder around Violetta's.
Maritas.
I'd ordered my men. Damaka, Tamora, Dumor. Cross the seas, drag the unmarked from their beds, bring them out into the streets before me. My fury seethed day after day. I couldn't find you, I snap, irritated at the tears that spring to my eye. Why didn't you send me a dove?
Why didn't you let me know?
Violetta is silent for a long moment, lost in her fever world. Her eyes open again, vacant and gray, bleeding color, and find me.
Raffaele says you are lost forever, that you are beyond help. I think he's wrong. But he sheds tears for you and shakes his head. I'm trying to convince him.
Her whispers turn urgent.
I think I'll try again tomorrow.
I reach up and angrily wipe my tears away.
I don't understand you, I whisper back. Why do you have to keep trying?
Violetta's lips tremble with effort.
You cannot harden your heart to the future just because of your past. You cannot use cruelty against yourself to justify cruelty to others.
Her gray eyes slide downward away from my face until her gaze rests on the lantern burning low near the tent flap.
It is hard. I know you are trying.
All my life I have tried to protect you. The room blurs behind my curtain of tears.
I'm sorry,
I whisper. My words float in the air, quiet and lingering. Before me, Violetta sighs, and her eyelids drift closed again. She murmurs something else, but it is too quiet for me to hear. I squeeze her hand, unsure of what I'm holding on for, hoping she will wake and recognize me not in a fever dream, not in a nightmare, but here at her side. I stay long after her breathing turns even. Finally, when the lantern is burned so low that the tent is all but shrouded in darkness, I put my head down against her bed and listen to the wind howl until sleep finally, mercifully, claims me.
Maeve Jacqueline Kelly Corrigan. Maeve hears Lucent calling for her, but not until she reaches the entrance of her tent does Lucent finally catch up. Maeve turns around to face her former companion. In front of her tent, the queen's personal guards place their hands on their swords' hilts, their eyes following Lucent's movements. Maeve hesitates at the sight of Lucent's grave eyes. They had ended their relationship a year ago, right along the white cliffs of Kenetra. She should let it be. After all, Lucent had told her then that she would not agree to Maeve's wishes. I cannot be your mistress, she said. So why does Lucent look so desperate to speak to her now?
Yes, Maeve says coolly. The girl looks ill, and the sight of her wan skin and aching limbs twists Maeve's heart.
Lucent hesitates, suddenly unsure of what to say. She runs a hand through her reddish blonde curls, then gives Maeve a hurried bow.
Are you well?
She finally asks, her voice faltering.
Are you? Maeve asks in return. You look terrible, Lucent. Raffaele mentioned in his last letter that you were suffering.
Lucent shakes her head, as if her own health were not important.
I heard what happened, she replies. Tristan, your brother.
She bows her head again and the silence drags on. Tristan, this was why Lucent is here. The weakness of her voice cracks Maeve's resolve, and she finds herself softening toward Lucent in spite of herself. How she has missed Lucent's presence. How quickly they had been separated again after the last battle against Adelina. She turns her head and nods once at her guards. With a clatter of armor, they step away and leave the two alone. He was never meant to stay this long, Maeve replies after a while. She shakes away the image of her brother's dead eyes, the mindless nature of his attack. It wasn't him, of course. He was already in the underworld. Lucent winces and looks away. You still blame yourself, Maeve continues, gentler now, even after all this time. Lucent says nothing, but Maeve knows what must be going through her head.
It is the memory of the day Tristan had died, when the three of them had decided to go hunting together in the winter woods. Tristan had shied away from the lake. He'd always been afraid of the water. Maeve closes her eyes, and for an instant she relives it again. Lucent gangly and laughing, dragging Tristan forward through the brush to see the deer she had tracked for them. Tristan, staring at the deer that had made it halfway across the frozen lake. Maeve, kneeling into a silent crouch, lifting her bow to her line of sight. They had been too far away from the creature. "One of us will have to get closer," Maeve had suggested, and Lucent had goaded and encouraged Tristan. "You should go." They'd played on the ice often, never with incident. So finally, Tristan grabbed his bow and arrow and crawled out onto the frozen lake on his elbows and stomach. They toyed with death 1,000 times, but that day would have a different outcome. There was a hairline crack in the ice at a fateful spot. Perhaps the deer's hooves were the cause. Perhaps the weight of the creature made the ice unstable. Or perhaps the winter was not cold enough, had not frozen the lake solidly. Perhaps it was the 1,000 times they'd cheated death, all returning for them. They heard the crack of the ice an instant before Tristan fell through. It had been just enough time for him to look back at them as he plunged into the water below their feet. "It was my fault," Maeve tells her. She reaches up, about to lift Lucent's chin, then stops herself. Instead, she gives Lucent a sad smile. "I brought him back." She looks down. "I cannot reach the underworld any longer. The touch of it has leaked into the mortal world, its harsh presence like ice on my heart. My power will kill me if I choose to use it again. Perhaps," she adds in a low voice, "part of all this is my punishment for defying the goddess of death." Lucent studies her for a long moment. Has it really been so long since they were young? Maeve wonders whether this will be the final journey they take together, whether Raphaëlle's predictions will all come to pass, that they will enter the mountain paths and never return. At last, Lucent bows. "If we must all go," she says, eyes turned down, "then I'm honored to go with you, Your Majesty." Then she turns to leave. Maeve reaches out and grabs Lucent's arm. "Stay," she says. Lucent freezes, her eyes widen at the queen. Maeve can feel the heat rising to her cheeks, but she doesn't look away. "Please," she adds quieter. "Just this time, just this once." For a moment, it seems Lucent might turn away. The two remain fixed in place, neither willing to move first. Then Lucent takes a step toward the queen. "Just this once," she echoes. "All my wealth, power, territories, military might, none of it matters now. She has gone, and with her shall I go." Final letter of King Delamore to his general. Adelina Amuteru. Gray clouds blanket the skies the next morning, clear warnings of snow, stretching as far as the horizon. As Maeve leads two riders out ahead to check our path, I sit with Maggiano, chewing on strips of dried meat and hard bread. Around a nearby fire, Raphaëlle sits with his cloak gathered tightly about him, talking in low voices with Lucent. Taryn sits alone, ignoring us all. Maggiano is in a dark mood, no doubt brought on by the cold and gloom. Without his joy, I find myself fending off the whispers in my head more than ever, struggling to stay sane. "You will lose yourselves in the snow and wilds," they are saying. "You will never return." Beside me, Violetta lies unconscious, shivering uncontrollably under a pile of furs and blankets. Hard as it is to see her like this, I am glad that she is shivering. It tells me that she is still alive. I reach out and rest my hand on the furs. "At this rate," Maggiano mutters. pulling me out of the depths of my thoughts. We won't see blue sky again until we leave this place. He turns his eyes to the sky and utters a loud, mournful sigh. What I wouldn't give for a little Maritas warmth and gaiety. Maeve and her riders return as we are finishing our breakfast. The paths are covered with ice, she says as we load our packs onto our horses. She catches Lucent's eyes for a moment and something unspoken passes between them. But they are otherwise clear. The snowbreakers have already been through. I notice the queen touch Lucent's boot briefly before heading to her own mount. There is a new closeness between them. Nearby, Maggiano and Raffaele help me secure Violetta on a stretcher behind two of Maeve's horses. She stirs restlessly as we go, murmuring something that I can't understand. Her markings look darker now, almost black, as if Moritas were slowly claiming her body for the underworld. I grit my teeth at the sight. Maggiano watches me as I stand beside Violetta's stretcher. She'll make it, he says, placing a hand on my arm, but I can hear the doubt in his voice. As we near the paths that lead into the first mountains, the narrowness of the valleys starts to funnel the wind, so it bites our cheeks and cuts through every gap in our clothing. I tie my hood down tight over my head and try to pull my cloak higher to cover the lower half of my face. Even then, my breath freezes against the cloth, creating a patch of white frost. With the wind come the whispers, howling against my ears with every blast. Their words are such a jumble I can't understand what they're saying, but they send my heart racing until my shoulders sag from exhaustion. Now and then, I think I see dark silhouettes standing in the crevices of the mountains, watching us with sightless eyes. I can only see them in the edges of my vision. When I turn my head, they vanish. Maggiano continues to frown at the sky. Is it just me, or is the sky turning darker? He nods up at the clouds. The clouds aren't growing any thicker. It just seems as if the day were passing more rapidly than it should. I glance up too. He's right. What should be the light of a midday sun hidden behind clouds looks instead like the sun is already setting. The shadows in the valley deepen as we go, stretching around us in muted shapes as the mountain ranges around us turn steeper. The path beneath our horses' hooves crunches with frost and ice. I lose track of how many hours we travel in this strange twilight. We all stay quiet. I ride behind Violetta's stretcher so I can keep her in my sights. Now and then her eyes open, gray and uneasy, but they never seem to focus on anything or anyone. It is as if she has already gone somewhere else. She's still here, I tell myself, but the whispers in my mind now sound like they are the wind, drowning out my thoughts, and my exhaustion and worry settle into a frenetic beating in my heart. This must be the way the origin's pull is affecting me. That night, a night that seems to fall prematurely, we stop in a hollow that shelters us partly from the elements. The wind is furious in this narrow pass, making it impossible for us to pitch a proper camp. Our horses are listless too, huddled together for warmth close to the fire we've built. The early twilight will come more frequently in the days ahead, Raffaele says as we all gather around him. He draws one curved line through the dirt with a stick, then notes several spots along it, including our location. We are getting closer. He points to a spot at the top of the path nestled between two mountains, the dark of night. Raffaele speaks with calm and grace, as he always does, but even his voice seems to carry underneath it a current of doubt. My hand lingers on top of the furs blanketing Violetta, who stirs uneasily in her fevered sleep. We are headed toward a realm known only in legends and folk tales. What will happen when we arrive? The laws of our world may bend and stretch there, Raffaele says after a moment. Things may not be as they appear. We'll need to be careful. At this, he glances my way. I feel the pull of this place, Can you?
I nod. Around me, the others do the same. My gaze wanders to where Taryn sits a short distance away. His cloak undone, seemingly oblivious to the cold. He is methodically sharpening his sword and knives. My whispers are growing stronger, while an air of darkness seems to hover around Maggiano. Violetta is fading, and Raffaele's senses are being overwhelmed by threads of energy from every direction. What must Taryn feel here, so close to the origin? Will this journey drive him even closer to madness? Before we settle in to rest for the night, I ask Maeve to set up extra sentries around Taryn. Even then, I still find myself waking at odd hours and looking in Taryn's direction, wondering whether I will see him snap. The dawn never seems to arrive the next morning. Instead, the world lightens only into the dim twilight we'd experienced the day before, leaving the landscape frightening in its darkness. A light snow has started to fall, sprinkling a coating of white all around us. Maggiano sleeps pressed next to me, one arm draped over my shoulders. My whispers are loud this morning, restless and roaring and without end. When I look behind us, I see nothing but the trail of our footprints leading off into the lonely mountains. I see the same up ahead. In my periphery, illusions of dark silhouettes continue to hover, my own ghosts that refuse to leave me alone. I shake fresh snow from my hair, then rise carefully so as not to wake Maggiano. I stretch my sore limbs. Only a few sentries posted by Maeve are also awake, standing some distance away, their attention fixed on the bleak terrain surrounding us. I look around at the scene, realizing that, if I wanted to, I could eliminate them all in this moment of weakness. Do it. The whispers are so strong this morning that I almost follow their orders. I scowl, shake my head, and press my hands to my temples. Why are they suddenly so insistent? We must be edging very close to the dark of night. Trying to ignore them, I rub my hands and decide to wander in a circle around the camp. Taryn's not in his sleeping area. This sends a note of panic through me before I notice him standing several paces past the sentries, his face tilted at the heavens in prayer. I watch him for a short time, then head to where Violetta is asleep. When I reach her cot, I kneel beside her. Her dark hair is frozen into clumps, and her pallid skin looks almost frosted. It's far too cold here for her to handle. We'll need to find extra furs. She can have mine before we need to stop again, but even then, I'm not sure if that will be enough.
Violetta?
I whisper, gently touching her shoulder. She doesn't stir. I hesitate, then remove one of my gloves and touch her cheek with the back of my hand. Her skin is ice cold. No warm breaths come from her. The whispers surround me, but I force them violently away. Surely she's breathing. This must be an illusion. I'm creating a nightmare for myself again. I will wake over and over until Maggiano rouses me from this dream. I shake her again, this time harder. Violetta! I say louder. My voice catches Raffaele's attention nearby. He sits up and looks in my direction. Then his eyes go to Violetta. The immediate expression on his face confirms my worst fears. No, it's impossible. I'd fallen asleep last night seeing the rhythmic rise and fall of her chest. She had been murmuring something I couldn't understand. Beads of sweat dotted her brow and her skin was hot to the touch. This is not real. I shake her again, my hands clutching her shoulders hard. Violetta! I shout. This time the others all startle awake and the sentries look over at me, but I don't care. I keep shaking her until I feel someone's hands on me forcing me to stop. It's Raffaele. He kneels at my side,
his eyes on Violeta's still form. The sadness on his face shatters my heart all over again. Can you revive her? I ask him.
I will try, Raffaele murmurs, but the way he says it tells me what I desperately don't want to hear. Everything will be all right. I will wake from this, as many times as I have to until I return to reality. The illusion will disappear, as it always does, and I will spend another morning with Violeta.
Now Maeve rises too, as well as Lucent and Maggiano, and heads over to me.
Your Majesty, I say to her. It is the first time I've addressed her properly.
You align with Moritas. You can call her back if needed.
I look at Raffaele.
Wake her!
I say angrily, my voice a command now.
Adelina.
Maggiano whispers.
Raffaele's hand tightens on Violeta's cold shoulder. He reaches up and cuts her cheek in his palm. I wonder if he's working his magic on her, the gentle tug of his energy on her heartstrings, perhaps stirring her with his calming touch. I crouch as he hovers there, my stare fixed on Violeta's face, waiting for her gray eyes to flutter open.
Adelina, Maggiano says again.
His hand touches mine and he squeezes it tightly. Maeve shakes her head.
She's gone,
she says quietly, bowing her head.
Then bring her back, I snap. The darkness in me rises up from the depths of my chest. I have seen you do it.
Maeve looks at me with cold eyes.
I cannot.
Lies, I hiss.
We need her. We cannot enter the dark of night without her. I
glance to my side where Terran still has his face pointed up to the heavens.
He is the only one of us all who is not gathered here in a circle. The whispers, already a chaotic din, now explode into a whirlwind around me.
Him,
they say. Their voices merging with my own voice.
Terran killed her. He's the only explanation. You knew he could not be trusted.
You, I say, the word trembling out of me with all the rage and blackness in my heart. Terran lowers his head and turns to meet my gaze. This is your doing.
In this moment, I do not see a former prisoner of mine. I do not see the man who saved me from drowning in the rough seas. All I see is the lead inquisitor who had once laughed at me with his poisonous white eyes, who had stolen Violeta from me and used her against me. The whispers repeat Terran's old threats, words he once spat at me with a blade pressed to my throat.
You have 3 days.
His taunting voice echoes across time.
If you go back on your word, I will shoot an arrow through your sister's neck and out the back of her skull.
He killed her when we were all asleep. Raffaele had warned that we might behave differently here, that our powers might be unstable. Terran has always wanted Violeta dead so that he can hurt me. The entire world around me now turns scarlet with my fury.
It was him.
Terran looks at me, his expression blank.
Adelina!
Maggiano's voice rings out again, but he sounds far away. The dark energy in me bursts free. I fling an illusion of pain at Terran.
Your skin ripped away, your heart pulled from your chest, your eyes bleeding from their sockets.
I will destroy you.
The others seem to vanish from my sight. All I can see before me is Terran crumpling to his knees from my onslaught. I rush toward him. The mountain path we are on turns black and crimson. Demonic silhouettes rise from the snow, their fangs bared. I tighten the illusion around Terran in fury and pull a dagger from my belt. Then I lunge at him. Terran bares his teeth. His sword is in his hands before I can blink. He swings it at me in a shining arc. I whirl to one side and tighten my fist at him. He lets out a shriek of pain as my illusion covers him in a net. I strike at him with my dagger, but his hand shoots up to grab my wrist. His strength, even in agony, nearly breaks my bones. I wince and thrash out of his grasp. My dagger clatters to the ground. I can hardly see straight through my illusions anymore. I'm surrounded by silhouettes and night, white cloaks and fire. Then a boy with golden eyes and dark braids stands before me, between us. His pupils are narrowed into black slits, and his jaw is clenched with resolve. He walks toward me without fear. "Adelina, stop," he says. "Get out of my way." I lash out at him with my illusions, but he narrows his eyes, raises his arm, and flings my illusions out of his way. They dissipate in a cloud of smoke around him. He continues toward me. "Adelina, stop!" It is Maggiano. "Maggiano, stop." The name is a small light, but it is there, and I cling to it in the maelstrom around me. I falter as he reaches me and pulls me into a rough embrace. "He didn't kill her," Maggiano is whispering. "Stop, stop." His hand cradles the back of my head. My strength leaves me in a rush. The world around us lightens. The silhouettes of demons vanish. Taryn crouches before me on one knee, leaning heavily against his sword, breathing hard. His pale eyes are fixed on mine. I look away from him and concentrate on Maggiano's arms holding me tight. "Taryn didn't kill her, but she is gone. It is too late." I start to cry. My tears freeze on my face. In my exhaustion, I step away from Maggiano and stagger back to where Violetta's body lies on the cold ground. The others watch in silence as I fall to my knees. I gather my sister into my arms, brushing her stiff hair from her face, repeating her name over and over until it becomes a constant loop in my mind. A note of anguish escapes me in between sobs. I see a vision of the night I'd first run away from our home, when we touched our foreheads together. I do this now, resting my forehead on hers, and I rock her back and forth, begging her once again, in vain, not to leave me.
It is the holiest of places, where the stars shine against rock and the twilight never ends. Be wary, for pilgrims may be so drawn to its power that they may lose themselves entirely. Charted Paths of the Kara Mountains, various authors. Adelina Amuteru. Had Violetta died in Kenetra, we would have buried her ashes in the maze of catacombs extending underneath the city. But out here, on the cold paths of the Kara Mountains, without enough wood to create a funeral pyre and the ground too frozen to dig, we can only cover her beneath a mound of stones, turned in the direction of our homeland. Before we do so, I lay her cloak over her body and bend to touch her hair. How luscious and dark her locks once were. How much I'd envied them when we were young. Now it looks faded, as if its light had gone from this world along with my sister. We should have moved faster. I should have argued less with Raffaele when negotiating in Tamora. I should have been kinder. The whispers haunt me with these words, and this time I don't stop them. The others stand beside me, hands folded into sleeves. Even Taryn stands there, his face vacant. No doubt he does not grieve my sister, but to my surprise, he does not say it aloud.
He seems lost in his own world, making silent prayers to the gods. Raffaele's head is bowed in grief, and his eyes are moist with tears. What do we do now, messenger? Maeve murmurs, her hand resting on the hilt of her sword. It is the question on all of our minds. We've lost her. Is all this futile? Raffaele doesn't answer right away. Perhaps, for once, he doesn't know the answer. Instead, he just continues to stare at the mound of stones, wisps of his hair blowing across his face. The question is numb in my own mind. I let the whispers swirl in circles around me, their presence so familiar now. It is your fault. It is always your fault.